How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
The machine learning systems that we build, I always like to call them super lazy. They always try to find the easiest way to solve the problem. And it's almost never the problem we actually intend to solve.
I think sometimes we get ourselves so overwhelmed with all the things that we have to do and have to look at. You know, now we're looking at airway. We're collecting data on airway, and we're collecting data on certainly oral cancer screening and all of those things. And then, yeah, and then what do you do with all these pieces of information? How do you implement them to make a good recommendation for the patient?
And so there's a long road to go before I think chatbots are going to be perfect. But as you mentioned, the economic value is huge, and the time savings and the customer frustration savings, I mean, that's a big one, is enormous. And so there's lots of people spending a lot of money and time trying to make this happen.
Get ready for your unofficial dental hygiene podcast. These are the tales of two hygienists, one East Coast RDH and one West Coast Guygenist. Listen as they tackle the profession of dental hygiene with humor and enthusiasm. Now, please join Michelle Strange and Andrew Johnston as they tell you a tale of two hygienists.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of A Tale of Two Hygienists, episode number 271. My name is Andrew.
And my name is Michelle. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome, welcome, everybody.
If you're a first timer, you know, stick around, hit that subscribe button. We love that.
Ooh, that was good.
All right.
You should probably be saying that more often. And also leave us a review.
Oh, yeah. We would love a review.
Oh, speaking of reviews, holy
moly. We got some, don't we?
We have some. I am so sorry, everybody, that I was not prepared for this. So if Michelle would stop eating her oatmeal for a minute and just like talk for a couple seconds, we're going to read some reviews.
Yeah, because I am getting my breakfast. It's 12:40. In the afternoon. I'm just not eating breakfast, but we have some reviews. So if you're a first timer and you enjoyed this, we would love for you to hit that subscribe button and then also rate and review this podcast. And you can actually do that from our show notes. And if you're a veteran listener, you found us and you've stuck around from the very beginning, or you caught up, you binged like crazy, then hit that rate and review button in the show notes. That'd be awesome.
Hey, that was some good vamping, by the way. Also, we're a dental podcast. If you are first time listener, we do that kind of stuff too. So, okay.
Yeah.
Let's read a couple of reviews. I think the last one we had was from, I think we read that was in December from Manal. These ones are both from February. One is from Bad Cold is their name.
Oh, hopefully they weren't experiencing bad cold. I know. I was like,
what was happening in their life when they're like, this is going to be my user handle? So February 1st, 2021, five-star review, which by the way, I know we say five-star review a lot. Thank you everyone for just giving us five-star reviews. We don't have-
We love that. Thank you.
Like, really less, oh, don't, like, that's not a challenge. Don't make it less than that. But I love that they're always five-star. Okay. So Bad Cold says, I love these podcasts. Aside from getting topical, intelligent information relating to our field, Michelle and Andrew fill a gigantic hygienist void. They are the forum that unites us all. If you are not fortunate enough to work with outstanding colleagues, Andrew and Michelle are always nearby. Please keep it coming.
Oh my God, we're your colleagues. We're like
right
your buddies
there.
At work.
We are next to you. We're inside your ears.
I love it. I love it. I love it. That is great. Because I have been a solo hygienist. I was a solo hygienist for 7 years in a practice where I had no one to, I don't want to say like vent to, because I don't believe in like full venting without like solution, like problem solving, but like no one to like air my grievances to and talk it out. And I got so bitter in this office because I felt so like, lonely.
Just alone. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough. I'll be honest though. The only good side about that is if you are the only hygienist, then you get to catch your own mistakes when they come through the next recall. So that's, exactly. That's the only like upside to not having to have everyone like see your work. Okay. We have one more review. This was from February 22nd, 2021, Kayla N. RDH. And it's also 5-star conveniently. Thank you very much, Kayla N. And she says, A Tale of Two Hygienists podcast is my favorite way to start the day. First of all, people use a lot of exclamation points. It's hard to like tell you, the listener, how many exclamation points are in a lot of these reviews. Maybe I need to say it with more favorite way to start the day like that.
There you go. There you go.
I love that each episode provides current information that I can utilize as a dental hygienist. It relights a spark that makes me excited to go into work.
Good job.
So thank you.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Hold on. We've talked about this before. That is us though too, right? We have felt that we hated going into work, but when you're learning something new and then you can apply it into that same day, you're like, oh, okay, this is my burnout's going away a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And something like motivational interviewing, like learning those things and then applying it and like not feeling like you're beating your head against. And if you're, again, a solo hygienist, sometimes you just have no one to have that conversation with. And it's just, oh, it hurts. It hurts. And we both have definitely been there.
Yeah.
Can I tell you a fear about our 5-star ratings?
Sure. I don't put anything out in the world that's going to come back to bite us, though.
No, I actually hope I'm not putting it into the world and people will go do it. But, you know, obviously I have I'm more of a contentious, I guess, presence on social media.
Yeah, no one's going to argue with that. Yeah.
Yeah, no. Like I go against the grain on a lot of topics and I have a serious fear that people are going to like never listen to the podcast, but just come give us like a 1-star rating because they're mad at me.
Look, I've thought about that a lot in our relationship. At the same
time, I'm going to be the one that breaks our 5-star rating.
But but more important than that, I think that you need to be your authentic self.
That's why I appreciate you, buddy.
I love that our audience, our listeners, like they get you too. Like they get you the way I get you. And I think, you know what? Social media people can do whatever they want to do, but we know the truth. We know the truth here with our friends.
We are a 5-star podcast because we have amazing people that come on this podcast, like our guest today.
Oh my God. Look, here's the thing. This is an interesting one, everyone, because we are going to be talking about AI and machine learning and robotics. And is from, so Andrew Carr is our guest today. And he has zero dental background and we're going to loop it all together. He's an incredibly smart individual. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. Hang in there because it gets a little bit deep at the very beginning of it, but it gets really good later on. So hang in there. Thank you for listening and on to the interview. Before we get to the interview, we want to say a big thank you to Paradise Dental Technologies or PDT for supporting the continuing education portion of this podcast for so many years. If you do not know already, many of our full-length episodes count for CE. You'll find the links in the show notes, or you can sign up for our newsletter by going to ataleoftwohygienists.com. When you sign up for the newsletter, we will periodically send out links to shows that have expiring CE courses attached. And none of this could be possible without the support of the amazing people over at PDT. So check out their hygiene and other instruments at pdtdental.com. That's pdtdental.com. Now, on to the interview. Everyone, welcome to this special interview. I'm really excited about this interview because not only do we have an expert in his field coming up, but I am joined today by Amanda Hill, who I'm sure all of you have heard her podcast already. She's a great friend of ours, great friend of the show. Amanda, welcome. Welcome.
Thank you, Andrew. This is really a dream come true to be a co-host on A Tale of Two Hygienists. This is super exciting.
Stop it. So, Amanda, I'm going to read you something as kind of an intro to our guest today. This is a conversation that I took as a snapshot on LinkedIn and see how many of these words you can follow. Okay.
And this isn't him posting that, but he responded to this one. He said, okay, this other person said, don't use lists of pros and cons for making tough decisions. Decide what to optimize, list your constraints, and then use a table/matrix. Rows are options, columns are desirable attributes, matrices. Allow easy comparison across attributes. Reduce information duplication. And then the parentheses, the pro of X is the con of Y. And then our guest today responded, what... This is so funny. What are your thoughts on using utility maximization versus regret minimization when making tough decisions? And then another person replied, the elastic net of optimal life control. Nice. And then another person, I think it's the author of this, said, I always think of it in terms of maximizing utility. Shoot for the stars. So if you fall, you land on a cloud. That's the kind of conversations that these folks are having. And I'm just thinking, what does it look like when you and I, Amanda, are having dental conversations and these people are on the outside?
How crazy! I think I only understood the word cloud in that whole thing.
Right. yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it must be the same thing when we get into all those big dental words and go down that track. It probably sounds similar.
Well, I'm hoping that today, like with our guest, his name's Andrew Carr. He's going to be on in just a minute. I'm really hoping that he's able to break down some of these words that we're going to go over. The topic is kind of vague. So audience, hang in there with us. It is data science, but also maybe AI, but maybe machine learning, but maybe some other things. And we're going to set the stage with the basics first, right? This is what all of these things are that you've heard on the news or in some of the things that you're reading. And then we're going to do our very best to tie it into dentistry at the very end. So sit tight, audience. Here we go. I'd like to welcome Andrew Carr to the program. Andrew, thank you for making the time to be with us today.
Yeah, it's an honor. I'm really excited to be here.
So if we could, let's start with a little bit about your background, because I feel like the audience is going to need to know like who you are, kind of what are some of your recent projects that you've been working on, education, and all of that.
Sure. So I am a mathematician at heart and a computer scientist by necessity in some sense. That's what pays the bills. Yeah, I've done some graduate work in machine learning. And most recently, I was with Google on a team called Brain. And Google Brain is their fundamental machine learning group. So they do a bunch of math, run a bunch of code, try and figure out what the next machine learning thing is going to be. And so I was there for a while working on a lot of really fascinating projects. But my experience goes from everywhere from self-driving cars to natural language work to computer vision and back. So I have a pretty broad experience in the field, and I'm extremely excited to just help people understand why I think the field is cool and why it's potentially a part of the future.
You should convince all of our audience that it's cool to love
us. I promise it's interesting.
What, Andrew Carr, you might not know this, Andrew Carr, about hygienists, but there's always a big joke that we went into dental hygiene because we could only count to 32 because there's 32 teeth in the mouth. So that's about as far as our math skills usually go.
That's perfect.
So Amen. Be kind and be slow.
Perfect. So, okay, as a quick side tangent, I want to talk about Google Brain for just a smidge. What is a day like working on projects like that? Because I envision Silicon Valley, everyone just in the front of their computers coding and just going to town and drinking Red Bulls. And
yeah, so it's a really collaborative experience. As far as who works at Google Brain, maybe first, it is PhD required for entry. That's wow. Everyone who works there has a PhD. There are very few exceptions. Of course, you know, there's some brilliant folks who don't. But the day is filled with reading papers from the field that were published, running experiments, proving theorems, doing math. And then it is actually fairly collaborative. So we meet very regularly to passionately argue about ideas because there's not consensus. And so it's nice to have a bunch of people who know what they're talking about, tell you you're wrong. And then you say, no, I know what I'm talking about too. And it's a really nice back and forth.
Is there, but in those types of situations, is there someone who ends up being right? Or is there still, because this is kind of a newer science, that you can both be right or both be wrong in the same way?
Yeah, the really nice thing about the machine learning field is the data itself won't lie. So you'll argue about ideas, and then one of you will build an experiment to test those ideas, and you'll run the code, and you'll look at the graphs. and one of you will be right at the end of the day. But honestly, most of the time you're both wrong and there's some third option that you didn't consider.
I love it. And I think that, gosh, isn't that just like the story for our lives in today's world, right? Like there's a lot of two-party things in the world. And I wish we'd all maybe collaborate and discuss and have a good time, healthy discussion. So Andrew, let me ask you, so you're the expert. So where should we start in all of these discussions that we want to talk about today? Is there a good starting point and then we can build from there?
Yeah, I think a really good place to start is talking about data. I use the word data and we've all heard the word data and we all probably also use the word data.
He's on Star Trek, right? That guy? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. He's an AI. And so understanding really what data is, like true examples of data, I think is a really good way to get a feeling for the type of problems that machine learning can tackle. So to start, data is something that you measure. Now, that's not a very clear explanation, but let's say, for example, you take a person and you want to gather data about that person. The data could be anything you want. It could be height, weight, it could be age, it could be years of education, it could be how far you've walked today. All of those numbers are data, but also their name is data, what they just said is data. And so it doesn't just have to be numbers. It can also be different types of words. You could take a picture of them on their Facebook, and that also is data. So it really is any piece of information that you measure about a specific topic.
Is that not a little creepy?
It's so creepy.
It's sort of like when I say something out loud to a friend, and then all of a sudden that shows up on my Facebook feed, an ad for that. Like, that's like the data.
Does that really happen? Hold on.
It does legit happen.
I heard that was a thing, but then it was debunked as a myth. And then.
I can't prove it, but I know it happens in my Facebook feed.
It certainly feels that it happens.
What does the data show, Andrew?
Yeah, I can only repeat what the AI experts from Facebook have said, and they claim it doesn't happen. And so there you go. I don't know.
Yeah, but they claim.
There's a funny story that goes around that people who work in this field, none of us have Alexa devices or Google Homes, or we turn Siri off. And that's very standard across people that I work with. And then I'll go to my brother's house, who maybe is less into the nitty gritty, but so very technical, and you have all of those sorts of things.
Interesting. Now we, in my home, by the way, turn everything off. So we gather this data, and then what do we do with it?
So it really depends. Most data turns out to be pretty useless. Like how far you walk today is not useful when trying to recommend something to buy on Amazon. But in general, data is used nowadays to solve business problems. And so you want to sell more widgets, or you want to sign up more customers, or you want to improve satisfaction, or you know, any of these metrics that you can measure. And so you'll collect data about that problem. So you can send out a survey or some such, and then you'll come back and say, oh, wow, people are really unhappy about something that we didn't realize. And you'll be able to take action based on that insight.
Is there a chance, though? Look, I don't know anything about stats. We took a stats course, but is there a chance, though, that when you're collecting the data, the sample size might be a little bit too small? Because I feel like we're reactionary people. One Google review and like we're changing all of our systems.
I think that's a great question. And that sort of gets to the point, the line between statistics and machine learning. And we can talk more about that at some point. But most of the time with statistics, you get a number after you've run all of these algorithmic machinery. You get a number out that says, this is how sad the person is, or this is how confident you are. Whereas with a lot of modern data analysis, there's a human involved in the loop every step of the way. And so you'll look at the data and you'll explore this data, and a human will make a subjective judgment. And it's not necessarily something that you put a number to as you would in the statistics community.
So I want to take a sidestep for a quick minute and let's maybe try and link this back to dentistry, even though I knew that we were going to link it eventually at the very end. I want to talk about the type of data that we collect in dentistry, because I feel like in our day-to-day, and Amanda, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, this is first of all, we do our charting, right? So here's how many teeth that they have. Here's how many fillings that they have, or how many missing teeth that they have first, I guess. Here's the type of filling that they have, or the type of, maybe they have a crown there, maybe they have a root canal. We input all of this data into that. Then we go through and we do the gum measurement, right? The parachartering is what we call it. In that, there's also groups of data. So you have your periodontal pocket depths, but you also have recession, furcation, mobility, bleeding points, all of these things that we're collecting also. The idea is, of course, we use whatever data we're collecting to provide treatment plans to achieve an outcome, right? That's what we're trying to do. But there's also data that we're collecting in satisfaction surveys, which you mentioned. And Amanda, what else am I missing? What other kind of data are we collecting in dentistry?
I'd say that we're collecting our recall intervals. You know, how often is a patient being seen?
Good one.
Maybe we're collecting some data on their decay rate. Gosh, maybe we're looking at pH. Maybe we're looking at wear, how much wear they have.
You know, this is interesting, Amanda, because I feel like, you know, because a lot of students and a lot of new grads are listening to this program, and I feel like we tell them these are the processes of doing the job. Here's the data to collect, but we never explain to them like what the purpose is, I don't think. Do you feel like we do a good enough job with that?
No, I don't think we do. And I think sometimes we get ourselves so overwhelmed with all the things that we have to do and have to look at. You know, now we're looking at airway. We're collecting data on airway, and we're collecting data on certainly oral cancer screening and all of those things. And then, yeah. And then what do you do with all these pieces of information? How do you implement them to make a good recommendation for the patient?
One of the problems, Andrew, that I see, I would say we do the data collection and then we try and implement it. The problem I see is that there's definitely software limitations. So for example, if we are seeing, we do this thing called a caries risk assessment, and it's a questionnaire. You ask the questions and yes or no, and you fill out this thing and you put them in a risk level, low, moderate, high, extreme. Based on their risk level, now you do treatment plans based on those risk levels. The problem is, there's no software that supports that. I mean, maybe Amanda, is there software that
I don't think so. No, we got to use our own brains.
And we don't look. Don't ask people to use our own brains.
Anytime you can avoid that.
So,
well, certainly the idea of having something to help you calibrate it, you know, from clinician to clinician to clinician, because I might put them in a low. Well, you're going to put them in a moderate. That's a great idea.
So I guess in the world, Andrew, like that's obviously a problem. What do you do with the data? You've collected it, you've created things, but there's not necessarily like a support system for a lot of the information that you collect. So what do you do with that information? Just stays in the ether of the world?
It just stays in the system. Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a high level point that we're hitting here, that there's a divide between the experts, you know, you who's working with this data, and then maybe the people who could build something useful for you. So the tool makers and the tool users are often very different people. And that's a problem. I think that's a big problem. And in the AI community, there's this hubris, there's this pride that we can solve any problem. You just give us the data and we will solve your problem. And that's not true. Like that's not the case. But so many people feel that way. And so one of my goals in bringing AI, you know, to more experts like you, is so that you can tell us these problems and say, look, we need you to solve this, and here's how we need it to work. And then we can go crunch the numbers. But we're not the ones who are trying to find problems and come up with these solutions, because we don't know. Like, we have no idea. So as far as to answer your specific question as what happens with that data, there's so much data stuck on paper forms. And there's so much data that just lives on one person's computer, and then they leave the firm and it's gone, and we have no access. And so we do need to figure out some way, right, to capture more of that data and use more of that data.
I'm thinking it would be amazing, Andrew Johnston, for Andrew Carr to make some kind of software that, you know, solve the whole staging and grading. You know, all I do is type in the periodontal pocketing, the attachment loss. I answer those questions about smoking and those kind of things. And then it just, bing, here's your stage and grade. How cool would that be?
Look, I wish that Axiom, the company, which is a dental software, sponsored this show, because it's a huge plug for them. That is the best software I've ever seen for calibration. Now, there's still going to be the input problem, right? So is a dental assistant, dental hygienist inputting the information correctly? When they ask the question, because there's if a machine was asking and gathering a data, it's usually like yes or no is like, I don't want to say it's true, but it's like it's factual. But I think when whoever's answering, by the way, is such a liar usually, but whoever's asking it as a person, for example, Amanda, would you say that throughout the day that you have three or more exposures of snacking or high carbs or whatever is one way of asking that question. But then if I said, Amanda, you don't have like three episodes of snacking a day, do you? Like, there's a way to change the thing that's going to change the data, right? So the input problem is a huge problem, but Axiom has a way where you put in the inputs, they pull the information from that Pareto chart, by the way, they pull the inputs from your caries risk assessment, and then they populate an answer for you. And so based on your Pareto inputs, mobility, recession, bleeding, all that kind of stuff, and then you enter in the bone loss for each of the sextants or quadrants or whatever, it'll come up with a quadrant or sextant diagnosis for you. And then then you input that diagnosis code, which, by the way, is something we also don't use in dentistry very often. We should be using it to say, hey, if this is the diagnosis code, here are the only possible treatment codes to use that correlate with this diagnosis code. So huge plug for Axiom. I love it. It's in almost all the dental schools, almost nothing in private practice ever, which is just baffling. But this exists. This is in our world today. We just, like you said, that we need to be calibrated on all the inputs. Did you know that existed, Amanda?
No, I didn't know that existed. Andrew Carr, is that AI? Is that what AI is?
You know, it depends. So the word AI, of course, is a loaded term. And some people mean one thing and some people mean another. It absolutely could be. I mean, that is a problem that you could solve using some form of statistics or machine learning or something. It also could be a bunch of if else. So if this is, then else. If this, then else. And that also, back in the 90s, is what people called AI. A lot of these, they're called decision trees. And so maybe I'm being a little unfair, but...
Is it like a choose your own adventure book? Do you remember those?
Yeah, exactly right. Go to page 93.
Exactly.
And that, at the time, you know, in the 90s, and maybe that's when a lot of these dental software started to be built, was state of the art. I mean, that's what people use, these decision trees. They're tuned by hand. You have some expert go in there and, you know, choose a threshold for, you know, gum decay or something, right? And nowadays, you could easily have the same system be more robust to more practices, to data input issues, to socioeconomic status of the person. Like, these things change how the data should be interpreted. And modern machine learning methods can handle that uncertainty pretty well.
I feel like I've taken us very far off track, and I'm really sorry that we've gotten into this whole other thing. So I'm sorry. Please get us back on track of where we're at in this whole process.
Sure. So we've just been talking about what data is, and then very briefly, what problems you can solve with data. I will say there's a caveat in most medical fields in that personal data is protected. And I think that's good. That's important. But what that means is I, as a data person, cannot go online and download a data set of people's dental history. I can't do that. And I shouldn't be allowed to do that. And so I think that's one key reason that we are seeing slow progress in medical fields. I think that's good. I think it's good to have privacy preserving applications. The same exists in law. So I worked in legal tech for a while, and you also cannot go download some huge amount of legal, you know, database. It's protected information for a reason. Now, what that means is people who are on the other side in the dentistry world, who know the rules and regulations quite well, can have input in this process. And I think that's important. But at the end of the day, the data that we're collecting, I'm an optimist. And so the data that we're collecting, in my opinion, should be used to help people and is being used to help people in many cases. And this is one premier instance. So I could imagine a world where much of the tedium of dentistry is automated. So a lot of this data entry that like no one really wants to do, and a lot of this rote diagnosis that is interesting, but people care about the patient care. And it doesn't feel far out. Maybe 5 years, we'll have that sort of technology in the dental space. And that would be awesome. I think that would be really great.
I mean, I can't tell you. I mean, just from a business standpoint of having automation in some way, shape, or form will decrease costs, your overheads. Yeah. Just like, that's huge. But it's a fine line, though, between there's going to be misunderstanding. It's going to be misunderstanding of you're going to take away that one-on-one patient care. And, you know, like I said about, you know, data entry. Like, so right now, for example, we have a system that's available in dentistry where you can have a medical dental history done online. It's sent to the office. It gets uploaded into the software that they have. But if they answered yes, that, what did you call it? A decision tree? There's not really a decision tree cascading down. And so you still need that person to figure out all of the same things anyways, it's not really a time saver at this point. So how would you then get to a point where you can kind of marry those two issues or solve that issue, I guess?
So the problem that you're probably running into is you don't have enough instances of people saying yes and no saved somewhere to be able to analyze. So it's disjointed in a bunch of different systems potentially, or maybe you don't have access. So one way is just to get a little bit more data across a few more people, and then a system would be able to learn the yes or no decision tree. But so I will say, you know, I'm talking doom and gloom about privacy, but really there is an area of machine learning. It's called, jargon word, differentiable privacy. And it's essentially, you can learn on data without ever seeing the data. And it's a fairly new field. One really common example is your keyboard on your smartphone. It will learn the words you type, but Google or Apple or whomever will never see the words you type. And so it's this really fascinating application. And so I would try to figure out some way to use that privacy preserving machine learning on this data. So the data comes into your system, someone has answered yes or no. Without ever seeing that yes or no, you can learn a system. It's harder, and there's far fewer experts in this area, but it's possible. And it's a way that you can preserve the privacy of your patient and still get really good outcomes quickly for the dentist themselves or the practitioner.
So as far as the inputs, we've been talking a lot about, like, I guess, questionnaire-based and observation-based. And I feel like I want to kind of jump into, and I'm sorry, I'm totally derailing your train of thought, I'm sure, but I just have so many thoughts and questions. So can we talk a little bit more about, like, AI / machine learning / whatever the term is for fixing the observation problem? So, like, my eyeballs looking and assessing something to create a diagnosis. What are we working on there?
Yeah, so this is what you'll see in the news as AI. And it's technically called computer vision, which is, I think, a pretty nice term, computer vision. You're teaching a computer to see and interpret. And so the type of data that computer vision works with is pictures and video. So you can take a video and figure out what's in the video. And so this is used in YouTube recommendations, or I don't know if you remember, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, they introduced this feature where you could mouse over the video and it would autoplay just a really small snippet, like this preview thing. That's automatic. A machine figures out the most interesting part of the video and it just makes that. And it's really quite cool. I will say computer vision is fraught with perils. So before we get into the application for dentistry, one of my favorite stories of a failure case of computer vision comes from a 2017 project where the group was trying to do cancer detection for malignant moles. So you would take a picture of this mole and it would say 99% this is cancer. So they trained it in this one hospital. They worked very closely with the doctors and they got 100% accuracy. Every single mole they could identify as malignant or non-malignant. So they said, oh my goodness, like, this is it. We've done it. And they went to another hospital, 50%. It was random chance. And so they were very confused, like, wait a second, this was perfect. What happened? And it turned out that in the training data, every time there was a malignant tumor in the picture, a doctor had used a ruler in the picture to measure the size of this mole.
Interesting.
So what they'd actually built was a ruler detector.
I think my kid could make that.
They were able to identify rulers 100% of the time.
Nice.
The machine learning systems that we build, I always like to call them super lazy. They always try to find the easiest way to solve the problem. And it's almost never the problem we actually intend to solve. And so in dentistry, you could imagine a really nice system where a patient comes into your clinic, you have a kiosk that they enter, the kiosk has a camera with a screen, like those sticky picture booths, they would smile, and it could do all sorts of gum measurement, tooth whiteness, you could measure straightness. I mean, these are all possible with computer vision. And as you're talking, that would greatly reduce costs of inpatient diagnosis, because they come with a little printout to your specialist and they say, look, this is my diagnosis from this picture we took. And you would look at it and say, oh yeah, that looks right, or no, that doesn't look great. But then you could give the specialized care that the patient actually needs, you know, the thing that the human is really, really good for, as opposed to, you know, measuring all of these things that are error prone.
That's interesting because, Amanda, that goes back to what you were saying earlier about like attrition or grinding, you know, and wear on your teeth. Because every time they came in, you'd have, first of all, you'd have your baseline and very specific measurements to the, I don't know, nanometer, I guess. I don't know how detailed it could be.
And those 3D scanners are doing that now. Some of those 3D scanners that are out. Yeah.
So I guess, Andrew, let's talk about that for a quick second. So we have these scanners that are intraoral cameras, I guess, and they give a 3D rendering, which then can, well, I mean, you mentioned that you had something 3D printed earlier. So they'll have like clear aligner therapy coming from these, night guards made from these renderings, crown and bridge. All of that stuff can get sent to the lab and they can just take that and make whatever the thing that they need to do. So could from a like extra oral outside the mouth picture, could they do the same thing or would they have to be in the mouth look like really invasive?
That's a good question. So I've never worked with those systems before, but I will say I doubt very much that the first half of that process uses any machine learning. So I don't think that the camera in your mouth is using any sorts of machine learning to create those reconstructions. Your question is, could you do the same thing with a camera? The answer is maybe. Not yet, I think, is the true answer. There's this field that's called depth estimation, where without any special software or special hardware sensors, can you, with just a flat image, estimate depth? And the systems that you're explaining have really special sensors that maybe will send out light beams and they'll bounce back and they'll get all of this specular information about your teeth. And it's expensive. I mean, those are expensive systems. And you know, if you go to some developing country, they won't have access to that sort of care. But everyone has a smartphone. And so the application that we're suggesting here could be extremely beneficial in that case. And yeah, depth estimation kind of works a little bit. It's in the self-driving car realm. They care a lot about using cameras to estimate depth. And the biggest user of this is Tesla. They're famous for only using cameras and not using LiDAR on their self-driving cars, which means they don't get depth information. And that has changed somewhat. But yeah, I think it is absolutely possible with the current methods available, but not possible with the current data that we have access to.
I think just jumping into just whitening, by the way, at the very beginning of just like take a picture, have the machine tell like, hey, this is where you're at shade wise. This is where we could get you to with this technology and kind of, I mean, not to be too businessy about stuff, but kind of selling the whitening stuff, right, without anybody being a part of it and have that input into their chart so that now me as the clinician can say, okay, this is where you're at. You've selected, yes, you are interested in getting to this shade eventually. This is what we can do. When do you want to start? Like that part would be significantly quicker and easier.
I can picture all that happening. Like I can picture the patient coming in for their appointment. Like you have this little like phone booth in the reception room that they go in and they go to their kiosk and they do this big, you know, smile picture. And, you know, this is what we can do for you today.
Yeah. Yeah. Wouldn't that be awesome?
Especially like a medical history update and all that stuff just done.
Oh,
the time it would save.
Great.
Oh. So a lot of that is totally possible with the code and algorithms that exist today. That's not impossible. When we talk about how difficult problems are, we use a funny scale sometimes and we say it's one motivated grad student away from completion. So it's one person, it takes them 3 years maybe, and they can solve the problem. And that's one example. It's just a motivated grad student away from being solved.
I love that. That's so funny.
Okay. I have another just off the wall tangent. It's not even a tangent. It's completely off the wall. Why, when we go to dental websites and they have this little chat box that's supposed to help us figure out the solutions, why are they always wrong in what we're looking for?
So I went 2 weeks ago to look at Invisalign options and I didn't really want to talk to a person because I didn't want to be sold something extra. And so I clicked their little chat bot and it was very wrong. It had no idea what I was talking about. It didn't know like, wait, you know, for example, it said, you know, what's your name? I put my name in and then it said like, what are you looking for today? And I told this, you know, chat bot and then it said, okay, welcome. We're glad you're here. How can I help you today? It like reset itself instantly as I was working and this happens all the time. So the field of study that handles these sort of chatbots is called natural language processing. So natural language is what we use to describe human language. Computer language, programming language is, you know, for computers. And natural language turns out to be extremely challenging. So over the past 10 years, computer vision has just exploded and is super valuable and super useful. And natural language processing is lagging. So I spent some time working on Amazon Alexa's social conversation skills. So the idea was you could have a 20-minute conversation with Alexa. And it was part of this competition, and I helped a little bit with figuring out if the user was swearing at Alexa and preventing Alexa from swearing back. Which you can imagine would be quite embarrassing.
Oh no, I want her to do that.
And so it turns out, though, that making something that can understand long-term contexts is the challenge. So the joke in natural language processing is, you know, the computer asks you, what can I help you with? And he says, I want to go to the store. And the computer says, okay. And then you say, how can I get there? And the computer says, how can you get where? Because it doesn't remember. It forgets. And it's hard to keep track of this long-term conversational dialogue. So this is a very open problem, very unsolved. And there's lots of people working on it in interesting ways. As far as the ones that exist on the dental program, some of them are quite sophisticated. Many of the ones that we interact with use decision trees. So if the person said yes, go this way. If the person says no, go this way. If the person said anything else, throw an error, like you don't know what they said. Mm-hmm. And that's the frustration that you and I get into. It's this open-ended dialogue that we want to have that the computer can't yet handle. Just this last year, there was a really big breakthrough in natural language processing. So it started in 2017 with this idea called a transformer, and it's moved on to now. I don't know if you read in the news, there's this new thing called GPT-3. And it was huge buzz all
hold
over
on,
the
Andrew,
world.
Hold on. Whose news is this? Is this like your insider, like tech news? Like, or is this like every day? Like, this isn't in dentistry today. I'll just say that.
Yeah. It's not on my NPR podcast that I listen to.
So it did make it onto the front page of some of the mainstream media. So NPR had a little bit on it, that kind of thing.
Nice.
So GPT-3 is this huge AI that has billions of parameters. So it has as many parameters as the brains has neurons, essentially. And it is used for text understanding. So it can generate text, it can understand text. And understand is kind of a strong word. It can fake it like it understands text. There's debate as to whether it actually understands anything.
Sort of like when I lived in Germany and I would just go, yeah.
That's right. That's exactly right. There's this really innovative company in actually the video gaming space that uses GPT-3. And so they're called AI Dungeon. And way back, you know, in the 80s and 90s, there were text adventure games that are really similar to these chatbots. So you would say, pick up the key, go to the door, unlock the door. But if you ever deviated from the small set of actions in the same way that if you deviate in the conversation, it would fail. It said, I don't understand. What AI Dungeon has done is used GPT-3 and these other big models to make open world text adventures, so you can type anything and the computer will respond. And it's really incredible. And so I can easily imagine this sort of technology being used for dental chatbots. You say, hello, my name is so-and-so, and it can respond convincingly as if it were a clinician, and it can record the data and it can record the information. Now, there are some big caveats. You know, there's some big asterisks on that it doesn't work. And it turns out GPT-3 is actually kind of racist because it learned from data on the internet, and it's like not awesome in a lot of different ways. And so it's not being used because it's a little bit dangerous. So like, you don't want that out there. And it's the same way we wouldn't want Alexa to swear. And so there's a long road to go before I think chatbots are going to be perfect. But as you mentioned, the economic value is huge, and the time savings and the customer frustration savings, I mean, that's a big one. It's enormous. And so there's lots of people spending a lot of money and time trying to make this happen.
So we have just a few minutes left, and I wanted to just make sure that we covered everything else. So what area haven't we talked about yet?
Yeah. So there's one big area that's actually being used today, and that would be robotics. So robotics is a field that's existed since the 50s and the 60s and is being used now to do surgeries and to do really powerful things in the dentistry world.
We aren't suggesting that there's going to be a robot coming in to take over and do the prophy for my patients for me, right? No.
So it probably won't look like the Jetsons where you have, you know, a robot coming in. It will look more like we want to do the scan, for example, the 3D scan. And you could easily imagine an automated arm that just scans real quick and there's no human involved and it takes 30 seconds. that would be a robotics problem. And you'd have to understand what is a mouth and where is the head and, you know, don't squish anyone, that kind of thing. But robotics, as I said, has existed since the 50s and 60s. There's been a lot of really great work. And a big lament of our field is that it still doesn't really work in general cases. Like, you have really specific instances where robotics is awesome. And those instances oftentimes don't use machine learning. So they'll use this thing called control theory, and it's basically math behind controlling things. And so on manufacturing line, you're building cars. If your robot has to make the same motion over and over again, it doesn't worry if it hits anything. It doesn't matter if there's anything around it because you've closed it off. It's in its own little box. That works, and that uses control theory. But as soon as you put people close to robotics, you have to be careful and you have to have a higher level understanding. And that's where we need machine learning. And especially in the dentistry space where you're quite close to the person's mouth and you're close to, you know, very sensitive parts of their body.
So a lot of nerve damage that could happen, like with,
that's right.
I mean, within just a very small frame.
Yeah, I could see it like breaking teeth or, you know, going down somebody's throat and making them throw up.
Fracturing it jaws, could, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It could be bad. But I still love this phone booth idea that people walk in, they answer all these questions, they get their teeth scanned, like all before they sit in my chair. Man, that'd be good.
Yeah, it would be awesome. And there are huge advances in the area of robotics, robotic arms, robotic walkers. And I'm very optimistic. I think this is personal opinion. There's, you know, not consensus here, but I think robotics is the next big thing in as far as applications of machine learning. And I would not be surprised if in 5 or 10 years, we have really nice general purpose robotics that can fold your laundry and pick up your toys and do your dishes. Like, that is right around the corner as far as applications go.
That makes me so happy.
You know, when the last time I even looked at robotics or watched like a robotics competition or something like that, I feel like one of the limitations to the robots or whatever the robotics part of it is that it's so linear in its movements, right? There's not like, you can't throw a ball that's not, doesn't have just like one straight motion to it. It can't come sidearm or, you know, three quarters and then go over the top. And then like, has that been solved already? Or is that still something that needs to be worked on?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways you can approach that. Actually, part of what I'm working on in my research is what's called soft robotics. So there's these robotics that it's essentially a plastic bag and you fill it with air. And because of the way the plastic bag is shaped, it will move in different ways. So it's called pneumatics, which means it's driven with air. And I'm working actually on 3D printed soft robotics. And so if you had a robot that's soft, like people are, I mean, our hands are soft and our muscles are soft, you now open up a whole range of motion and a whole amount of reaction time that you can catch balls and you can move things really well. And I think soft robotics is the answer to the question that you're asking here.
As we're going to be closing this down. So imagine someone listening to this is like, you know what? Got in the wrong field. I have my dentistry background, but now I want to move into something like what do you tell people when they are interested in kind of getting into this field a little bit more? And what is the application for a dental background person?
Yeah. So it's a big question and we could have 3 more episodes talking just about how to break into the field if we wanted to. But at the end of the day, there's 2 paths. There's the mathematical path and there's the programming path. And a lot of people marry the two and that's awesome. But I would imagine for someone coming from a dental background would be going down the programming path. You want to build things. You don't necessarily want to make new AI. You want to use what exists. And so as far as like actionable things, learn Python. So Python is a programming language and it is the workhorse of modern AI. That's what everyone uses. Google, Facebook, whomever, Amazon, right? It's all Python. So there's a really good book that just came out somewhat recently called Automate the Boring Stuff with Python, and not affiliated in any way, but it's designed for people who want to automate boring things in their life with Python. So it does data entry. You can do Excel manipulation. You can do web scraping so you can get, you know, information from your Facebook without ever having to log on your computer. So there's lots of really good applications. So that would be my advice is find some way to learn Python and then start building interesting projects relevant to your day-to-day life.
It sounds like there's a lot of things we could solve in dentistry if somebody's interested in figuring it all out.
Agreed.
And we all know that dentistry has some money. So I think that it'd be a lucrative field to kind of get into as well. Andrew, thank you so much for making the time. We're going to need to have you back on again and do like a part two and part three for this. If someone wanted to reach out to you though, and or get your book, where might they find all that information?
Yeah. So thank you for mentioning that. So I just wrote a book. It's called Everyday Data Science, and it's designed for exactly this audience, people who want to know what can you do with data science and machine learning. So it's on Amazon. It's also, there's a PDF and Kindle version on Gumroad. So at Everyday Data Science, and you can reach out to me on Twitter or via email. My information is pretty easy to find online.
You have a lovely blog with lots of words that I didn't understand.
Thank you. Thank you.
So I got the book already. I'm page 41 into it, so I haven't gotten that far into it, but I like it because it's a kind of step-by-step for someone like me to be able to understand it. And I think it's fascinating as all get out. So again, Andrew, thank you so much for being here. Amanda, thank you for guest co-hosting with me. This has been awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Have a good day, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Well, another great week, another great episode. We thank you all so much for listening each week. If you haven't already, hit that subscribe button, whatever podcasting app you're using. Also, just a reminder, our guests are so fantastic that they love when you reach out. They love when you interact with them on social media. And you can interact with us on social media as well at Instagram or Facebook. We're also on LinkedIn. You can find us at A Tale of Two Hygienists. You can also go to our website, ataleoftwohygienists.com, and we would love for you to go there and subscribe for our newsletter. We have lots of stuff on our website. We have a learning center. You can search for any episode. This is an easy place for you to find the links for our CE courses and take the test. There's just so much more there. So head over to ataleoftwohygienists.com. And if you want, you can also send us an email. I'm Michelle at ataleoftwohygienists.com. And then there's Andrew, who is Andrew at ataleoftwohygienists.com. And we just want to say thank you so much. If you love this episode and you're loving the podcast, we would love for you to subscribe and leave us a review. And, you know, 5-star, go ahead and do it. 5-star, just hit that 5-star and then leave us a review. We really appreciate it. We love reading them. It fuels our fire. And we just appreciate you guys so much. I think that's it, Andrew. Anything else?
Nope, that's it. Have a good week, everybody.
Bye, y'all.